federal employees working through this shutdown are trying their best to make it business as usual. October is Energy Awareness Month, and the Army is asking all soldiers to evaluate their use of energy and water. Creating an energy-conscious culture is critical to the mission. Here to tell us more is Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment, Catherine Hammack. Catherine, good morning.
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
All right. The question is, how are you doing with so much of the staff out of there today?
Well, there's not much staff here, so the start of Energy Awareness Month is coming across a little bit slowly, but still, the amount of energy needed to power a soldier in the field and in theater impacts reach, mobility, agility, interoperability, and sustainability. So the sheer volume of fossil fuels needed to maintain our military operations is critical.
Can you just describe for us, what is it like in your office, and what percentage of people are there? Are you doing the normal duties that you would otherwise do if this was just an ordinary day?
Well, it's a bit of a ghost town here. Certainly all military is on duty, and it's about 50% of the Department of Army civilians that are furloughed here. Certainly there are emergency personnel that are still on duty. And with the Pay Our Military Act that was recently issued, we have payroll people trying to figure out how we can comply and ensure we're still able to pay our military, and we still have some budget people. So we have a very rudimentary staff here on duty, but the majority of military support is shut down.
So tell us what you had planned for October 1st and 2nd to kick off the month, and then maybe follow up with what it is you're actually doing with what you can do with the resources you've got under the shutdown.
We had planned activities throughout all of our Army installations. They range from activities at a school, helping school children understand the importance of energy and water management and stewardship of resources, to activities on bases, working with our soldiers, to activities in the community, working on how we can ensure that we appropriately steward these resources and sustainability within the communities in which we work and live. So a lot of these activities are slowed, if not halted, because some of them are things that our civilians do. Our Department of Public Works personnel, our engineering managers, people on the bases are just not there or not showing up for duty unless they're considered critical and essential.
And those who are considered critical or essential, can they actually devote their time to this project, or is this considered not, I guess, critical or essential enough under the circumstances?
Well, it's not considered critical and essential because a lot of these community-related activities or communication activities are postponed or delayed. So there's a few things we can specifically support, specific military operations, maintaining police, fire, emergency, medical protection. Those kinds of things really are our focus. And the few skeleton staff of civilians are really focused on the emergency or immediate response to failure.
Well, we're sorry it didn't quite work out as you hoped to kick off this month, but there's still plenty of energy and conservation issues to talk about. And one of the ones I wanted to ask you about is if you could give us an update on the fuel issue, the long-term look at how the Army and I guess all the DOD military branches are looking at the future of the types of fuel and where it will come from for operations, because that's, you know, they say an Army travels on its stomach, but it also travels on its gas tank.
It does. If you look at the military overall, the Navy is the largest consumer of liquid fuels, followed by the Air Force. So the Army is really the smallest consumer of liquid fuels. Then when you look at the liquid fuels we do use, about 40% of that is consumed on base. So that is powering generators, fueling generators that then run heating, lighting, cooling, computers, and other operational equipment. That other 60% is what goes into our tactical and non-tactical vehicles, be they air or ground vehicles. So when we look at our liquid fuels use, we're always looking at options and alternatives. And the Navy is certainly leading the way in looking at biofuels and biofuel blends because they offer us options for the future. So as we look at those kinds of options for blends, the Navy is doing testing on their equipment. The Air Force is doing testing on their aircraft, and the Army is doing testing in our ground and rotary assets to ensure that when a drop in fuel is available at a competitive price, that we are prepared and ready to use it.
And for the Energy Awareness Month, did you have specific goals in mind? I mean, were there things that you wanted to say that you had accomplished by October 31st?
There are not specific goals for that month. We have specific goals in mind for energy consumption, reduction in energy consumption, and increase in the use of renewable energy. And a lot of our focus lately has been in helping people understand the role that renewable energy has in military operations, whether they be our permanent installations or whether they be our theater operations. What's very interesting on theater operations is if you've got a base that's getting an airdrop of fuel every 3 days, when you get more energy efficient, you can take them to an airdrop of fuel maybe every 10 days. That means those soldiers on that base get to focus on the mission more, increasing the effectiveness of the mission and defending the territory that they are responsible for versus securing fuel and water and accepting airdrops. So really that's what efficiency is about in the use of renewables and theater, is enabling the soldier to focus on the mission and increasing their capabilities.
And looking at the bases, by the way, we're speaking with Catherine Hammack. She's the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment. And looking at some of the home bases, they're pretty big. Now, a lot of cities are putting in these bike share racks, these red bicycles that you rent and drop them off somewhere else. Any thought of doing that kind of thing at some of the big Army bases? I'll bet you that would have a lot of uptake.
That would be interesting. And when I was over in Kuwait about 2 years ago, one of our bases in Kuwait had a bike program where when you landed on base, you had an opportunity to get a bicycle for the entirety of your stay. So they were increasing their use of bicycles at that base there. Here in our home bases, we are increasing the use of and design of bicycle paths so that they're available whether it's children commuting to school or a soldier commuting to their place of duty, that they have easy access and safe access to ride a bicycle to work. And frankly, with the kind of traffic that we see on our roadways here in D.C. and we see around the United States, sometimes a bike is the fastest way to get there.
What are the behaviors of soldiers that you would like to change most when it comes to energy consumption?
I think one of the behaviors that we can change most is really a focus on what your mother or grandmother told you growing up. If you're not using that energy, turn it off. Turn off the lights. Turn off the air conditioning. Unplug your chargers. You know, every time you see one of those black boxes that you plug into the wall, that consumes energy whether your end device is plugged into it or not. So if you leave your charger plugged into the wall and your cell phone's not plugged into the charger, that charger is still consuming energy. And sometimes we call that vampire load. It's always sucking down energy. So if we can remind people to unplug those kinds of devices and turn things off when they're not in use, that makes an incredible difference.
And in terms of those activities that you have postponed, at least for the couple of days, should the government be able to resume fairly quickly, do you plan to hold it, or is it just canceled because you don't really have any sort of flexibility or options because you've got so many partners and the like?
One of the challenges is going to be figuring out how to reprioritize. And certainly there are a lot of things being delayed or postponed right now. Some things may never get done, and that is unfortunate because I know we've got a lot of people who put effort, time and effort, and sometimes it's the personal time that's been put into making an event or a communication effort effective. And sometimes we're not going to be able to make those kind of things up. So that's unfortunate. You know, really, we have a very good civilian and contracting staffs that work hard every day. And there is going to be a backlog of work that's going to be have to be done. And some of the good efforts or the kinds of things we'd like to do is what's going to be postponed in favor of the must-do activities.
And can I ask you, for you personally, what's the hardest part of this shutdown?
Well, the hardest part is when I need some information, there's no one there to ask a question to because they're not working. And the other interesting thing is many civilians like myself are working on IOUs. I'm coming to work with no guarantee of a paycheck. Even our military right now, with this military pay, we're trying to figure out how we can ensure that we are paying them, but civilians like myself that are still working today have no guarantee. So I'm going to be over on the Hill this afternoon talking to several members of Congress about what the military needs are and what our military issues are and challenges created with the shutdown and the fact that we don't have a budget. We need a budget to operate.
Well, Catherine Hammack, thanks so much for taking time out of your day to speak with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you both, Emily and Tom. You guys have a great day.
And Catherine Hammack is the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment.